This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver, it's primary day. Time to vote for president, sort of. Me and producer Paul Caroli are talking about what today's primary vote could mean for Colorado. Plus, Denver's most powerful labor union violated local labor laws, and your ideas for how to fix downtown. Today is Tuesday, March 5th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Bree. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's up?
Well, I feel like I need to address something.
Okay.
Last week, we were talking about bagels.
Yes.
Because we're looking for the perfect bagel expert to help us with this quest for Denver's best bagel.
Yeah.
And
it's an important duty.
Yeah. And we take it seriously. And you had mentioned Moe's Bagels as like the OG option.
Yeah.
We had talked about all these different what would be the places we're going to consider? What would be the OG?
Yeah, Moe's because Bagels we came want up. Old Denver represented.
Absolutely.
In some way.
Yeah.
There must be some institution that is the classic.
And I kind of was like,
yeah,
Moe's Bagels, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to clarify something. Old Denver is this vague concept. Okay, we don't know.
We're going deep here.
We are.
Okay.
Like, some people are like, I survived the 1965 flood, Old Denver, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people are like, I went to the Ocalan when they showed movies, Old Denver.
That's Old Denver.
I had my birthday at Celebrity Sports Center, Old Denver. I mean, I was there on the last day of Old Elitch's, Old Denver. I drank Mad Dog 2020 at Rock Bar, Old Denver.
Do you have more? These are great.
I mean, this was that. I'll be honest with you. That was the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s.
Okay.
That I just broke down.
I bribed Robert Speer for
I guess that
some
is
government benefits.
That is ancient
Denver,
Denver or Wild West Denver. I only went back to the 60s.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that concept of Old Denver really depends on who you're talking to. And so by definition, I think in this case, Moe's Bagels started in 1992. I think it qualifies as Old Denver by many people's standards,
it's like 40
right?
years.
Yeah, that's 40, a long time.
42 years.
It's a long time. But I think there's one more time.
It's not 42 years.
No, it's
32
years.
Years.
I was just going to say, because that would make me 50.
My mother always says, don't do math in public. And I blew it again.
Your mother's Anne is correct.
She is. She's just right.
But 1992 is several decades ago,
mm-hmm.
even though some of us like me refuse to believe that. So by that standard, yes. But there's one more caveat that I thought about, which is it's a Boulder original.
Oh, really?
Yes. It is not
Moe's
a Denver.
Broadway bagel is the Broadway in Boulder.
Yes.
Not here.
It is a Boulder original.
Interesting.
However, someone could say, well, Bree, Denver claims Casa Bonita as its own. And where is it located?
Uh-huh.
Lakewood. So by that measure, Moe's Bagel should by all means be considered still the OG. If Denver wants to consider it, I'll take that. So
it's certainly been around a long time.
Yeah. So I just wanted to state for the record that I agree with you all who feel that way. And I think that Moe's Bagels I would happily have them represent OG Denver.
That's so good to hear.
You're welcome.
I'm glad. This was clearly bothering you. Clearly bothering you.
Well, it just like, I don't know. I think in part because I don't have a consistent OG Denver bagel place that I was like, well, then what is it? I don't have one. What do other people consider it?
You know what I've been thinking?
What?
I read the Wikipedia page for Einstein Brothers Bagels,
oh, no.
headquartered in Lakewood.
Oh, really?
And also, the corporate history is like very Denver because it was formed by the company that owned Boston Market when they were like, we want to do bagels. We think there's an opportunity in the national marketplace for bagels. So they went and they bought up four regional bagel chains in parts of the country where there was no strong bagel tradition. And they united them under the Einstein Brothers brand. that is a total creation of this corporation and is headquartered here.
So they are kind of part of our fast casual history.
A little bit, yeah.
Which we consider to be like the Noodles and Company Chipotle. I mean, at one point, Spicy Pickle, that went south. Mm-hmm. Tokyo Joe's, Quiznos style.
Smash Burger.
Smash, yeah, that level of restaurant yeah. bagels could be. That's so interesting.
Isn't that fascinating about Einstein Brothers? I had no idea. So I kind of, I'm like, I always had a soft spot for Einstein Brothers, and now it's like even more so.
I never tasted their bagels, even though my brother was a baker for them. But huh. He never said anything nice about it, so they must have not been that good.
You know what? We got a whole bagel show.
Yeah, I was like, this is
up.
Not the bagel show.
We got some news to talk about.
Yeah.
This fine Tuesday, election day, which we'll talk about more later. But first, we got to talk about this really fun story from the Colorado Sun. Super interesting report from Jesse Paul, past guest. He reported last week that the National Labor Relations Board judge, Eleanor Laws, has ruled that Colorado's largest private sector union, the UFCW Local 7, they have like 23,000 members. This is the union that
it's the food union.
Led the King Super Strike a couple of years ago. Apparently, according to this judge, they have also violated federal labor law in dealings with its own staff.
This bums me out so bad.
I get it. Tell me why did this make you feel the way?
Because we've been covering this issue, right? Mm-hmm. We've been covering it over the last few years. Have I been part of a union myself? No. So I think that's where maybe people outside of the situation, like us as reporters, we're not seeing a whole picture or able to ask the right questions.
What
to
do you
know.
Think people aren't seeing?
I mean, it's weird when the organization that's supposed to be working for workers' rights is violating workers' rights.
Yeah.
And it just felt like something like, could we have seen this? Was there something? But probably not, because
Well, here's what I think people are missing there. Because what you just said, that's really nice. I think that's the sales pitch that unions give to prospective members. Because what people don't think about is that a union is its own money-making operation, you know?
It has interests.
Yes, their purpose is to support workers, but that's really more the service they offer as an organization.
Yeah, it makes me think about the closest I have to this, a union would be like a, you know, I don't know, not a political movement, but like working with people in movement work, community work, mm-hmm. you'll be doing the same, you know, you have the greater good in mind. You guys are all working for the same thing, but they're those people that are the loudest voices in the room and they don't represent you, but they all of a sudden represent your cause. And then it's just like, hey, that person sucks, but I have to pretend in public that I love them because we're fighting for the same thing. And that's kind of how this felt to me, was just like when you know the person you're fighting alongside is not a good person. And I don't want to say that, I'm not implying that anyone in the situation is a good or a bad person, but it just like shows you how complicated organizing is in general.
Well, let's make it a little less complicated. Let's talk about a very specific example here, because the allegations from these former workers at the UFCW, they're various. You know, it's stuff like refusing to bargain in good faith with the staffers of the union. But here's the specific that grabbed me. This is from the Colorado Sun story. They're talking about how the discontent between union president Kim Cordova, past guest on CityCast, and her staff, this discontent has been growing since that 2022 strike we mentioned. So from the Colorado Sun story, quote, the union staffers had been putting in long hours on the picket line in the cold. They commented about their exhaustion and frustration with how the strike was going during a Zoom call with local and national union leaders. Cordova wasn't present during the Zoom gathering, but she called a staff meeting on February 7th, 2023, where she said she was embarrassed by what her employees had said on the call. She also suggested they were well compensated and could leave their jobs if they were unhappy.
This was the exact quote I also pulled.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just so, it's just a perfect example of this struggle, which is like, what did we see when we were covering this? People outside in Colorado winter all day, day in, day out.
Yeah, it didn't look fun.
No, and it was cold, and it was, I felt this. We saw this. And for her to respond that way, or allegedly respond that way, I was like, this is a person that's sitting in a nice warm office.
Yeah, it's weird though, you know, knowing a little bit about the history of this particular union, like, it's interesting that this is where her story has ended, Kim Cordova herself.
Yeah. Can you explain why that is so interesting? Because I did not know this until we started covering this story?
Well, 14 years ago, there was almost an identical round of reports about this same union because there was this same person who had led it basically for 20-30 years, I think, Ernie Duran Jr. And by 2010, there was similar discontent growing within the organization itself because, and this is this thing that I think about, but I'm sure there were other things, but nepotism was mm-hmm. the accusation because he hired his daughter and other family members to high paid, like more than $100,000 a year positions at the union. And people who were paying the union to support them were getting increasingly upset that all that money was going to this family and not, you know, helping to increase their wages and strengthen their
I 100% would rights. Feel that way too.
Totally. And Kim Cordova was a worker at Safeway. She was like a checker. So she led this like workers' revolt and then got herself elected
to replace Ernie
Duran.
I want to break this nepotism.
Exactly. Up.
I want to be the representative of the people. And now she's being accused of that.
Yes.
Some very similar issues, or at least she's being accused of just not being the person that she apparently presented herself to be.
Yeah.
But I think what we will know is later this year, I think in the fall, she'll be running for reelection for what could be her sixth term.
Seems like a long shot now after this report.
It does. And also, maybe they need to re-examine how long you can be president.
Oh, yeah.
If you're, I mean,
should be term limits for union presidents.
It sounds
interesting
like
proposal.
That, I mean, it could be something they're going to be looking at because I assume with this election coming up, there's going to be conversations about restructuring how this union works to fix the problems that she allegedly created. So maybe one of those things is limiting how long people can, because if the Duran family was like running it for decades, mm-hmm. I'd be pissed too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they did have regular elections, so they kept getting elected. So like that's the accountability.
Well,
like,
yeah.
So it's not.
But if people were afraid to run against them.
Perhaps we don't know the
circumstances. Retaliation, who knows?
Yeah.
But I have to say this was just a bummer, I think, because the energy that we've seen around unions over the last couple of years has been really, I think, engaging and interesting to see as a consumer, as a grocery store consumer, watching folks talk about their experience and then step forward and say, we want to change these things was, I found it very, I appreciate this energy and I hope that this doesn't squash that energy.
Well, that's what I would say is the takeaway here is like, you got to remember that unions themselves, they're not immune to the problems that affect all workplaces that
Absolutely.
Have these power hierarchies. And it like, in fact, the fact that these workers, like they're more attuned to labor law and they can call things out more effectively, like that makes them stand out. It makes it seem like this is a particular or an exceptional circumstance. But I feel like if I was looking at this and I was feeling down about it, I would think, you know, this is the exact reason why you do organize so you can have the power to make this kind of change happen.
Yeah, even if it's the change within your own people.
Exactly.
So, interesting stuff.
Fascinating, fascinating story.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high-quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CityCastDenver for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com. We've got an election happening this week in Colorado.
It doesn't feel like it, but it is definitely happening.
Primary ballots are due today, mm-hmm. actually. And we're talking presidential primaries. Paul, what are you looking at here?
Well, honestly, I think it's going to be a really boring election. I think we know the outcome. I mean, we know because the Supreme Court delivered their ruling in this Trump ballot case yesterday, we know that the votes for Trump are going to be allowed to count. It was a unanimous ruling from the Supreme Court. So all that hoopla has come to naught.
Gosh, I'm curious to hear in the aftermath what our what folks that who we've talked to about this issue think about it on the on the right.
Yeah.
What they think about the outcome. But
yeah, we'll I think the interesting stuff is on the other side though. The fact that the Democrats put this option on their primary ballot for non-committed delegate and then they didn't define it, it has created an opening that as of last Thursday, I think, has been filled. Did you see this news about the campaign that's happening?
Oh, I have very closely been following it. I would say this is in my sphere.
Oh, really?
My world, yes.
Okay, well, let me give a couple of facts and then I want to hear what you're hearing from folks. So last Thursday, where I first heard about this, two press releases, one from the Colorado Palestine Coalition, one from the Colorado chapters of the Democratic Socialists of America. And they both were like, you know, we know this is last minute, but we want you to vote non-committed in protest of President Biden's response to the ongoing Israeli assault on Gaza.
Yeah. I've seen that exact same thing. I think it goes back further than that. I think we're looking at the previous elections with the presidential elections where folks on the left were very energized by the multiple candidates we had. I'm thinking about the Warren people, mm-hmm. the Bernie people, and then they got, you know, Biden.
They got Biden.
And so this to me feels like just an extension of that. It's just heightened by the fact that we have this situation with Gaza where folks are very unhappy with Biden's response or lack of response or the way he's been handling it.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this in Michigan where there is mm-hmm. a disproportionately large Arab American population. Look, they had a similar campaign. More than 100,000 people voted for their version of the non-committed delegate in Michigan last week.
Can you explain why Dems had this, but Republicans didn't?
It's a great question. Well, okay. Republicans, I mean, they're doing their own thing. It's a party decision. So it was the Democratic Party decided to put this option on there. But that's the thing. They didn't say specifically what it was for.
What do you think? Did you gather from, like that you mentioned Democratic Party Chair Shad Mirab had talked about this, but did he explain why they were doing it? Was it, you're saying it's unclear. I'm curious what they, were the Democrats saying anything about it?
Well, he's not giving a specific reason. And we talked about this last week with Westward editor Patty Callan. He says non-committed delegate is actually a choice. It doesn't mean none of the above or anything like that. They're not necessarily casting a vote against the president. They're actually sending a choice for a non-committed delegate to then make their choice of the remaining candidate at the convention. So it's all about practicality.
It feels like it's giving room, though, for folks in the party to say, we don't want the guy that you all are probably going to put forth.
I think so. I mean, that's one interpretation.
Yeah,
the people I've heard talking about voting non-committed, that's what they say. They'll say things like, oh, Biden's so old. You know, we've had a lot of those reports lately, and I think that does affect some people.
Yeah, I heard a really interesting, Ezra Klein did this whole sort of case against Biden op-ed on his show mm-hmm. recently. And he talked about that issue. And it was just more like the age thing wouldn't be as much of an issue if people were happy with him or felt like the energy was there. He gave two really clear examples of campaign speeches Biden gave 4 years ago and one he gave recently. And he was just like, being a president is a performance. Mm-hmm. And he said, Biden's not performing it very well and people just aren't buying it. And unfortunately, I think that's leaning on the age issue as well. Because Trump's like not that much.
I think he's like 3 years younger.
Yeah. Not that people are, that's not the comparison, but I can see where.
But Republicans care less.
It's
the
true.
Polls also show the Republicans are aware of his age, but don't think of it as important as Democrats think Biden's age is.
I just think it's a way for people to not just be straightforward about they don't want to vote for Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I worry about how it's going to be interpreted, though, because now we have all of these competing interests in saying, like, here's what these votes mean. I don't know what Shad Mirab is going to say tomorrow.
I am very curious.
I don't know what this coalition is going to say. Are they going to declare victory or over people who were actually voting in
what
protest
would be
of Biden's
victory
age?
Too? Would it just be more, you know, a certain percentage of votes? You're right. That part is not clear. But I do. What I feel from the non-committed vote push right now, especially around the Gaza stuff, is just folks are frustrated that they don't feel like they have a choice on the left. Mm-hmm. And this is the only way that they can express, I'm not happy with the situation we're in. And the current leader of America is someone that my party has elected. And I'm not happy with him either. It doesn't mean that they're the argument I hate is like, well, you're just trying, then what all you're going to do is this is going to backfire and it's going to be a, then Trump's going to win. And I'm like, I don't right. think that's what people are saying. I think they're just saying, I'm not happy with what the current situation is. And this is the only way I have to express it.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that those same people aren't going to vote for Biden in the fall.
Right. Right. They're just saying this is the only choice I have right now to, or the only chance I have to give some sort of a nudge that I'm not happy.
Yeah. I think you're right, though. This point about like a frustration of not feeling heard, like I feel like this has been a really growing trend here in Denver, especially. Like we see protesters in the streets. We saw it this past weekend, Palestinian solidarity protesters downtown filling intersections and stuff. But then our lawmakers are consistently not representing them. I mean, in Denver City Council, I think it was 9-4
that the ceasefire
resolution went down. Yeah. And then also at the State House, there was an effort from Denver's Representative Elizabeth Epps to repeal this bill or this law from a few years ago that blocks the public employees retirement agency from investing in companies that participate in a boycott of Israel. And that went down, that died in a committee last week too.
And again, I think this is a growing frustration that began way before this. I think with the last election and not feeling like we or that people on the left got the true choice that they had wanted.
Yeah.
Like I felt like Biden was kind of pushed on like, well, he's just always wanted it. Mm-hmm. He's run, I don't know how many times, or he's been in this almost in this position so many times. And I think a lot of folks, especially younger folks, they're not seeing themselves represented at all. Mm. At least in their interest, not necessarily in their age group, but at least in their interest in the things that they care about. And yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out.
Yeah.
Also,
the vote in Denver, especially, I would predict a big turnout for non-committed delegate here in Denver
versus the state at large.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting.
I think they might clear 15% here. That's the threshold.
Is the okay
for actually sending somebody.
Interesting.
I know. It could be an exciting week.
I have to say, this makes it so not exciting, but this makes it something I'm really paying a lot more attention to now since this non-committed situation really came forward. Yeah, now I'm much more interested to see, because it's hard to get outside of your own bubble, right? What you see, what you hear from your friends, the conversations you have if you're politically minded people like ourselves versus what the reality is. Sometimes those can be really different.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious if what I'm seeing in my world is going to be reflected in that.
You're hearing a lot of like, I'm voting non-committed though, for sure.
I mean, you know me, Paul. You know my people.
I think it's going to be huge.
My people are the people in the streets. Those are, and by my people, I mean my friends, my relatives, the creative partners I've had working in the arts. That's where I see my people. That's why I'm curious. Does that represent Denver as a whole?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, we'll get another clue tomorrow.
We will. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we hear from you, our dear listeners. So we always love to hear from you, our brilliant and hilarious listeners, about the things you care about. We ask a lot of questions. We say a lot of wild stuff on this show.
We're wrong a lot.
We are wrong. We're human beings, and we're wrong. But we love that you respond. Yeah. I want people to really understand we genuinely enjoy hearing from you. So we did an episode last week about downtown. How can we fix downtown? The downtown conundrum. We had our Politics and Green Chili correspondent and seventh generation Coloradan, Justine Sandoval on, who had some great ideas too. But you all reached out to us with your thoughts.
Before we get into this, can I just say, one of my ideas I brought up was, well, I mean, all of them were other people's ideas, but one of the ones I brought up was this vacancy tax idea downtown.
Yes.
Someone emailed me and was like, they've been talking about this on city council. I think you were onto something.
I thought that was an interesting take, and I liked seeing the pressure switch here.
Yeah.
So
it could be something. All right. Our first one here is a note from Tara. Hi, CityCast. Thanks for all you do. Love the show. Thanks, Tara. Thoughts on the downtown episode. While the vacancy rates downtown are real, I just want to counter the intro to say that overall, I love downtown. There are so many lively, vibrant spaces and great things to do. I think how we talk about downtown matters. So let's talk about making it better, not reinforcing the myth that it is bad.
Fair.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Fair.
100%, Terry. You are correct.
I struggle with this, actually, talking about, am I too positive about downtown and being too Pollyanna-ish, or if I'm being like, because sometimes it sucks and sometimes it's awesome, you know, like on a nice sunny day, go down, hang out. And
Yeah, and I think about the Nuggets parade, how much fun that was, the stock show parade, how much fun that was. I mean, we're going to be, you know, just like downtown in the summer and the winter, there's all these different things, but then there's also like the ongoing construction on 16th Street Mall sucks, let's be real.
Yeah.
The dining options, pretty bleak at this point. There's a lot of things that do suck, but I hear you, Paul. It's hard to make sure we're balancing that.
Tara's next point. I wanted to give a shout out to the idea of the 5280 trail. I know it would be wild expensive, but I think it sounds so cool. Maybe a full episode on the idea.
Oh,
Bree, do you know this?
I wish that I had read up on this. I do. It was like, it's like a pedestrian trail that connects all of the like city close neighborhoods.
Yeah. To go from like Coors Field down through Uptown.
Yeah.
I think down into Baker maybe, and then all the way up the West Side.
I love this idea. I don't know what it would look like in practice or how much it would cost. And I say that to say there's a lot of work that's been done on this. So we could talk
like
more about it.
Like planning work, design. Oh, there's
And budgets and all that stuff has been figured out. But it makes me think a little bit of the Riverwalk in Pueblo. And I know that's just for the downtown, but it's a really pleasant experience.
It's quite lovely. Yeah.
And I could see if we were able to connect all of the city close neighborhoods with something that felt that way. Be pretty great.
I don't know. Personally, the 5280 trail has never been that exciting to me. As a biker, even, who would likely be using it.
Sure.
Like, I remember I reported on it back when I was doing business reporting, like years and years ago. There was a, they did like a pilot of just one stretch of the 5280 trail. It was through Arapaho Square near the downtown Five Points border zone area. And it was like, it was okay. You know, there was food trucks and there was like AstroTurf on top of asphalt. And it wasn't exciting. I feel like something like this, it really depends on the businesses on it and how, what they make of it and how people get.
Yeah, and if it actually just gets used or if it becomes one of those things that was like the grand idea of planning that just kind of fell flat.
And maybe it's just like signs up, you know,
oh
this
my
is
God,
the 5280 trail,
started.
Which maybe that's something,
okay,
I don't know.
You mentioned signs. I would, before we have the 5280 trail, I'd actually just rather us work on Vision Zero and keep people from getting killed in the street and not just putting up signs, because that's what Vision Zero is. And maybe if it was just safer to get around, we wouldn't need the 5280 trail.
All right. Let's move on. We got one more point from Tara. We have younger kids, so I'm always looking for family-friendly options. With the Avs and Nuggets in the playoffs in the last few years, we wish there was more family-friendly ways to take part in the experience, because the games are usually way past bedtime and tickets are so expensive. Darn, yeah, they are.
I mean, but I would say they have weekend games are usually earlier in the day.
Oh,
just a recommendation
that's nice.
If you're looking.
Tara goes on, something similar to the Play Ball Park /MLB fan experience during the All-Star weekend, where kids can engage with the sport and enjoy being a fan without going to a game or a watch party.
Or that's going fun. To the bar known as Coors Field.
Yeah.
Which is really what we know it for. It is not like, it's not that it's not kid friendly, but it's really not aimed at children. So I see, I feel that. I agree. I think there could be some cooler ways to include kids, but also I'm just thinking about safer streets would make it easier for kids to be downtown.
All right, Tara, thanks so much for writing in. Those are great ideas. Really appreciate that. Looks like we got one more message here, a voicemail from
Bobby about our episode we debuted last week. Landlord Watch.
Hi, my name is Bobby. I used to live at the Mint Urban Infinity Apartments. So Brandon, I wish you all hell, or I wish you give them all hell, and all that. I now am a case manager actually for the homeless, and that whole experience really opened my eyes to just how terrible it was. We had entire days where the water would be cut off, where the heat was cut off. I think when there was that heat streak and it was over 100 for a week straight, we didn't have AC in our building. I couldn't get to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was still 85 degrees in my apartment. We had people, a line of people going into the apartment complex office, asking to speak with people, asking to get things done. Oftentimes the apartment staff would snicker behind our backs. So for them to say, you know, we're housing providers, we all could have done it. It felt almost better on our own if there was the option for that. But we're all kind of stuck living in these apartments because there's not enough housing out there. And people take advantage of that. So again, Brandon and the rest of you all with the lawsuit, if you guys hear this, I wish you guys give them hell. Take care. Have a good day.
Wow.
Man.
Bobby, thank you so much for calling in. What a message.
I think what this reminds me of, Paul, is you and I are homeowners and we have control over our environment. We have control over the heat. We have control over the water. At least we know and we can plan. And that's what we hear so often is like people are at the whims of whatever's happening and they can't control it. And that was just a great reminder to me to think about all the different aspects, as simple as something as it's too hot.
Yeah.
It's hard to do anything when it's too hot.
Yeah, a week straight, temperatures over 100 and no AC in the building.
Brutal.
Yeah. I can't imagine trying to sleep in that. I'm so sorry I had to go through that, Bobby. That sucks.
Me too. Well, if you are like Bobby and you have stories you want to tell or issues you have with your landlord situation, whatever it is, we are ongoing. Landlord watches all the time.
Oh, landlord watches ongoing for sure. And we're working on finding some experts too to help answer some questions. So if you have a bad landlord story, or if you currently have a bad landlord,
yeah, you have a lease question with, or you're just trying to get some issue resolved, let us know. You can call the Landlord Watch hotline, 720-500-5418. You can leave us a voicemail, which we love, but you can also text us if you don't want to leave a voicemail. That number again is 720-500-5418. Well, Paul, thanks for joining me.
See you next time.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell the former Colorado Speaker of the House, Chrisanta Duran, about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye-bye. Colorado House of Representatives, sorry, I ran out of breath.